Well, folks, the government of China recently admitted to contaminating 20% of its farmland and 90% of its surface water by allowing for the unrestricted dumping of domestic and industrial wastes. The Chinese people's hunger for clean food leads us to ask, what do we do with our wastes?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 968th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Aaron.
Yes.
What do you think we do with all of our waste?
It's a good question. I wish I had the answer.
Well, stay tuned. Also with us, producer Anna Ringelman. What do you think, Anna? What are we doing with all of our waste?
Good morning. Well, I think it's becoming increasingly scary what we do with our waste, and
scary.
We should explore that further.
That's what we're going to do. Folks, a few years ago, the government of China began restricting the dumping of raw household and industrial waste into the environment. Consequent to its tardiness, the government was forced to admit 20% of China's farmlands, 90% of its surface waters are contaminated with toxic heavy metals. Here in the developed world, of course, we don't do that. The dumping of domestic and industrial waste is greatly restricted by our ethic of environmental cleanliness. We do like it clean, do we not? A huge set of rules and regulations and an alphabet soup of government agencies. In fact, if someone were to be seen dumping raw waste into the environment around here, they would be shamed, sued, and fined out of existence. Though we are justifiably proud of our clean environment, we still produce a lot of waste, and so today we pause to ask, how do we treat our domestic and industrial wastes? What does treatment remove from the wastes, and what does it not remove? How do we dispose of treated waste? And here's the most important question, in my mind at least, are foods grown in farmlands that contain treated wastes safe to eat? Well, that assignment went to Kristen Carlson, our UC Santa Cruz intern producer. She is a senior at UC Santa Cruz, correct, Kristen?
Yes.
And you're also a mom, right?
I am.
You're a foodie, too, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Now, before you dug into this, what did you think we did with our treated wastes?
You know, honestly, I had no idea what we did. I just assumed that it was all being taken care of.
Well, I guess it is being taken care of, isn't
yeah,
it?
It is.
Okay, well, you have somebody here who can help us out, Carolyn Snyder. Want to introduce Carolyn?
Absolutely. So we've got Carolyn Snyder
yes.
here. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
And you're the Professor Emeritus for Rochester Institute of Technology?
That's correct.
And as well as the founder of Citizens for Sludge-Free Land. Could you tell us a little bit about your organization, please?
Yes, we are a clearinghouse for accurate scientific information and actually to correct the misinformation that's being disseminated by groups that promote the use of hazardous material like sewage sludge to use that for a fertilizer, to put it on land, to grow food. There's a lot of misinformation out there by a very powerful group of industry that's embedded with the regulatory agencies, the government, EPA and the USDA, who are promoting this, have been promoting this practice for many, many years, decades.
And Caroline, we ask all of our guests, because we like to have transparency, who pays the bills for Citizens for Sludge-Free Land?
We have no funds. We have no staff. We pay our own bills. It's our savings. Actually, most of my savings have gone into this. So we have absolutely no. Occasionally, we got some grants about 5 years ago from the Sierra Club. Very small grants, to distribute some information for printing some fact sheets. We also once, twice I think, got a grant from some local groups who were interested in this issue. But we have had no grants for the last 4 years. And they're very small, like $500, something like that.
Well, thank you for your work, then. We all appreciate that. This information came to me new. I'm an environmental studies student at UCSC. We talk about a lot of things up there, but biosolids and sewage sludge was a completely new topic for me, surprisingly. And we were wondering what was it that brought you, that made you aware? What was sort of your epiphany moment into this topic?
Well, I found out about it because here in New Hampshire was a high-profile death case, a wrongful death case, where a young man who lived in a neighborhood where they had just spread a lot of sludge on a hayfield, was close to his house, and not only he, but almost everybody in the neighborhood got very ill. Some of them had to go to hospitals. And he died from respiratory failure. And it was very obvious to us that that was absolutely linked to the land application of sewage sludge because of wind direction, everything else. And what really got me was the lies that they were telling about that particular incident. They wanted the people who promote this and who don't want to admit that there are problems, the agencies, they simply denied that there would be any link about this, but it seemed so obvious that there was. And then I started digging into it, and I found an incredible net of deception and lies that were being told about this particular product and this particular practice. And I've been working on it around the clock for the last 10 years, really.
Carolyn, it seems like you found yourself in a very much of a David versus Goliath situation.
Oh, not just David and Goliath, David and many Goliaths.
I mean, a whole herd of Goliaths against you in this one.
It's unbelievable. And I just want to quickly say this program today is very, very timely because a brand new book has just been published about this by David Lewis, a high-ranking, award-winning former EPA research microbiologist who has been fighting to try and change this harmful practice within his agency and was obviously totally denigrated. He lost his job. He lost, he lost his mm-hmm. career opportunities. So here's somebody, who tried to speak out, tried to change it, and was silenced. And his book is called Science for Sale. And I would suggest, and it's a lot, I've talked a lot about this whole issue.
Well, really quickly, we're going to go into a break in a couple of minutes, but would you help identify for the audience all of the Goliaths that are involved in this? Because it would seem like first there would be municipalities. They would be one Goliath, right? Because they have all kinds of waste material to get rid of.
And it's very costly to do it the right way. So the cheapest way is to ship it out to farms, usually, minority groups, cash-strapped farmers who say, "Hey, my God, this is free," and I get high yields. How can I turn it down?
And another Goliath would be industry.
Absolutely. Every industry in the country, not just the biosolids industry, every industry in the country benefits from this policy because they do not have to get rid of their, treat their hazardous waste in the proper way. They can dump it into sewers.
Okay.
And once it's in there, they have no liability.
Okay, so you're up against every city in America and every industry in America.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you're quite a gal. I'll tell you that from the get-go.
No, not just me. I mean, the others. I'm not alone. And then there's the EPA, who's been promoting this from the very beginning. They don't want to they don't want to say it's wrong because the reputation is at stake. And the people in EPA who wrote this rule and this policy are still, unfortunately, there. So, and then there's the Department of Agriculture with Rufus Cheney, who is the highest-ranking agronomist there, who also helped write the rules, and he's not going to admit, no matter how many dead bodies or dead cows, that there's anything wrong.
Wow, so it's Carolyn against the world.
Carolyn Snyder and friends
against the world. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Kristen Carlson today, the associate producer. And you, what do you think we should do with all of our waste? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain. Oh, my goodness, is that food safe to eat?
It is not.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city greenbelts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Welcome back to Food Chain Radio. We are speaking with Caroline Snyder of Citizens for Sludge-Free Land. Caroline, when did they change the name from sewage sludge to biosolids?
Oh, about 10 years ago. You know, that's a long story. It was obviously a public relation gimmick because sludge sounds pretty unappetizing, which it is. Biosolids has absolutely no, it sounds kind of, you know, nowhere. But even the word biosolids now is getting such a bad reputation that they're changing that to residuals. I mean, they need to change, they need to verbally detoxify this material because they can't detox, they're not admitting that it's really toxic. So they use all sorts of names, you know, euphemisms. They don't very rarely use the word pollutant.
They have some great names for the people who haul this stuff, Carolyn. I would just scan some of the names, and they're like Waste Management's BioGrow.
Oh, yes.
National Resource Recovery.
Yes.
Anti-Pollution Associates. Residual Technologies. Now, that's a good one.
Yeah, right.
Ecosystematics. Environmental Protection and Improvement, and Earthwise Organics.
Oh, yes. We have a whole list of those branded products that contain sludge that sound very green. And there are a lot of front groups. For example, the U.S. Compost Council is a front group that that promotes this very harmful practice. But I just want to correct something quickly. I'm not alone. There is no food company in this country that accepts produce grown on sewage sludge. And this Campbell's Soup, you know, and Heinz and Nestle and Del Monte, and they all, we checked recently whether they still have the policy. They said yes, because they want to protect U.S. Food. They want to, you know, have healthy food that's grown on land that has not been treated with sludge.
So what happens to the food that is grown with sewage sludge? Where is that going, or how is that used?
Well, you see, it's really only dumped on farms, small farms that are marginal, that food, I guess, is going to be eaten. The food route that is most dangerous is milk from dairy cows, where sludge has been top dressed on those pastures, because dairy cows also eat soil. They don't just ingest their forage.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're eating sludge. And in that sludge are PCBs and dioxins and chemicals that concentrate in the fatty issue of animals. But the way it's excreted is through milk. And so whole milk and butter and ice cream and cheese, the food that small children depend disproportionately on milk. So they are now getting these PCBs and dioxins into their system. And girl babies who later have babies of their own, and if they nurse those babies, then they transfer all those PCBs and dioxins into that generation.
Wow.
And the mother, of course, benefits because she gets it out of her system and probably doesn't get it. The risks for breast cancer are much less. So it's a very hazardous and harmful practice to use this material.
And uses go beyond fertilizing agricultural land. We've got golf courses, parks, athletic fields, forest fertilization. And I also saw that it's making its way into compost and soil amendment mixes that are sold in stores.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's what we're fighting now. And there are all these branded products with these wonderful names. And they will not label. They will not label to say, you know, these things include biosolids. These things include these products. And there are no rules about how much material you can put in a garden. And so people can use a great deal. The larger the application rates, of course, the more dangerous it becomes.
Carolyn, let me take a step backwards here a little bit and see if we can fix in our mind how we take care of this stuff. First of all, is there a difference between household waste and industrial waste?
It depends what, you know, there are obviously very hazardous materials that people buy and use and discard.
But do we discard them into different places, or do they all go down the same drain?
Well, everything that comes out of a household is mixed with everything that comes from industry. And the sludge promoters are always saying it's only toilet waste. It's only, you know, what you flush down from your house. But that's not, and they will not really admit that every industry is dumping much more, really, of the hazardous stuff than most households.
What about hospitals? And what about...
That's another big problem. You know, hospitals, they use radioactive material, you know, and all sorts of poisonous stuff. Not poisonous, I shouldn't say that. You know, pharmaceuticals and so forth. Everything from a hospital, everything from a... any industry, any business, metal plating shops, anything that goes into any entity that's connected to a sewer can discard any amount of hazardous waste as long as they report this once a year.
Now let's talk about the treatment.
Yes.
What's going on with the treatment? How are we dealing with all these different things that are in the waste?
That is a very good question. Pre-treatment is supposed to have prevented harmful things from going into the sludge and into the soil once you land apply this material. But that's really a big joke because the material is still being dumped. It just can't be dumped all in one day, so they sort of space it out a little bit, because if they dump too much at once, it might mess up the microorganisms in the plant itself. And sometimes they treat it. If it's too acidic, they will try and neutralize the pH a little bit. But smaller plants that do not have a huge amount of flow through of wastewater don't even have pretreatment programs or requirements, and the large ones are totally in consistently in violation of the pretreatment, even the inadequate pretreatment regulations that we now have on the book. We have records from Los Angeles where more than half of the industries that dump into sewers are in repeated violation of the pretreatment regulations. So it's not working. And EPA actually admits that it is in a state of crisis. It's very difficult to enforce. Probably isn't being enforced, sort of. So anyway, this is not working.
Are you saying that the treatment that we are doing is insufficient to do the job that it's supposed to be doing? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And we have data from EPA, the latest survey samples they did from, they sampled, I think, 130 plants, sludge samples from 135 different wastewater treatment plants, and they found a huge amount of dangerous chemicals, metals, pharmaceuticals, everything in there. So obviously the stuff is going through. And that was a limited sampling. I mean, there are thousands of chemicals.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. Right back, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, going in search of Mayor Patty Martin when we come back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. Michael Olson with Kristen Carlson and you. This is the Food Chain Radio program. We're talking about what happens when we flush things down the toilet. Where does all of that go? You know, in China for 40 centuries, farmers survived by recycling everything. I mean, everything, including their own waste. And that enabled them to get by because nothing went to waste. Then, you know, when the communists took over and forced the industrialization of that agriculture, farmers had to use modern chemicals and whatnot, and they recycled everything, just like they always have for 40 centuries. And consequently, China is now completely polluted to the extent that the Chinese people are crying out for clean food. And you know where they're getting it? They're coming to the United States and buying clean farmland so that they can grow clean food for their people. So what are we doing with our waste? Are we really doing a good job of getting rid of it? Or are we just recycling it, kind of like the Chinese are? And that's what we're trying to come to grips with today. With us, we have Carolyn Snyder, who is with Citizens for a Sludge-Free Land. And we also have, I think, Patty, are you there? Patty Martin?
Yes, I am on the line.
You are on the line. Okay, Mayor Patty Martin. She will always be the mayor of Quincy, Washington, even though she's not in office right now. Would you like to introduce her, Kristen?
Sure. So, Patty, you co-founded Safe Food and Fertilizer years back. What's going on with Safe Food and Fertilizer these days?
Well, Safe Food and Fertilizer is still active, but I've kind of been sidetracked with some other pressing environmental issues in my community.
Okay. And you had mentioned that you had some funding, but the funding sort of dried up. What happened to that funding?
Oh, it seems, I mean, up until 1997 when we exposed the use of hazardous waste and fertilizer, toxic was a fundable issue. And after exposing that, the funding for toxics activities really dried up. I mean, there's very few foundations that fund for toxic research or education, which makes it difficult to, you know, sustain an activity like Safe Food and Fertilizer.
Now, your work focused a little bit more on industrial waste being used in fertilizer. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the difference between that and sewage sludge?
Yeah, and tell us about Patty Martin's epiphany, where she woke up one day and said, something's amiss in Quincy, Washington.
Well, I guess I should probably start with the epiphany. And it really happened with the city and the Port District's acquisition of some land that made no sense. And somebody, you know, posing this thought to me that it was contaminated, which, you know, put me in touch with a farmer, a local farmer, and he had had his land contaminated by a rinsate pond, you know. Anyway, to make a long story short, we started tracking, you know, not necessarily the movement of these materials, but on contaminated lands, we tested some of the soil, we tested some of the, you know, quote-unquote fertilizer, and we found some alarming metals that you wouldn't expect to see in fertilizer, right? Like beryllium, titanium, uranium, arsenic, lead, cadmium, mercury, right? And at the point that we were nearing realizing what we had come across, there was a movement. By this time, had been elected to office, and there was a movement to undermine my credibility, right? Much like they could do to the farmers, but I didn't have a piece of land or a large piece of debt that they could hold against me and, you know, keep me from bringing this kind of information forward. And you know, we took what we had. We had, you know, a stack full of documents that we had tracked materials that were moving into fertilizer, and we took it to the Seattle Times, and kind of the rest is history. There was an investigative report that was put out called Fear in the Field, How Hazardous Waste Becomes Fertilizer, and that came out in July 3rd of 1997, and unfortunately came out in the middle of the week, so it didn't gain the national traction like it would have. And when it did start to pick up some traction, someone exposed the affair between President Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And so this whole story was bumped off the national consciousness.
Just like that. Patty, Carolyn talks a little bit about being a David in a world of many Goliaths. Do you have that same sense that you're, you know, in your work in this field is a work against many Goliaths?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When we exposed this, you know, the only thing that was wrong with the investigative report is that the practice of disposing of hazardous waste in fertilizer in Washington State was not legal at the time we exposed it. And the state turned around and legalized it, right? And, I mean, I didn't anticipate the state to be one of the Goliaths. And so, yes, I do feel like we're up against a huge Goliath.
So what kind of industry are these hazardous wastes coming from, and what kind of fertilizer companies are they going into?
Well, right now the loophole that would be the biggest one that legally could be used in fertilizers would be all zinc-containing hazardous waste, okay? Because after we exposed this in 97, the EPA came around and promulgated a rule in 2002 that basically not exempted from regulation, but allowed for all zinc-containing hazardous waste to be used in fertilizer, okay? And they had to meet a certain metal standard. And so that would be galvanizers, foundries, steel mills, and anyone that generates a zinc-containing hazardous waste. At the time we exposed this, we found things like mining waste, coal ash. Coal ash is still used as a lime, right? I mean, that's, you know, they're seizing an exemption called a bevel exclusion for that one. Film processing materials, nuclear fuel processing waste is still on the market in Washington State and Oregon.
So let me clarify this for the audience, if I might. Goodness sakes, Caroline talks about about the materials that we flush down the toilet ending up and being spread on farmlands. And Patty talks about the industrial waste from manufacturing ending up in fertilizers. And all of a sudden, we're starting to think, all of this stuff is going on to our farmlands? Is that, could that possibly be true? That is the question on the table, and we have David on the line. We'll pick him up when we get back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Kristen Carlson, we're taking on the things that we flush down the toilets and the wastes of our industry and how these materials are finding their way right onto our farmlands and the lands of our country and what that means for you and I and our children and our grandchildren. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. Right back. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here, and we've got with Kristen Carlson, who's the assistant producer here today. We're talking with Patty Martin from Safe Food and Fertilizer and Carolyn Snyder from Citizens for Sludge-Free Land. Kristen, you have the question of the day here.
All right, so this is posed to both ladies, but maybe we'll start with Caroline. Who's paying who to do what?
Say that again.
Who's paying who to do what? Where's the money going?
Money. Who's paying who to do what?
Yes.
Well, the industries that can dump the hazardous waste into sewage treatment plants are saving huge amounts of money by not treating hazardous waste properly. Okay, so they're saving money by doing this. And the price that is paid is obviously the exposed population to this hazardous materials, to these hazardous materials. Farmers, I think, are often getting paid to take it because, you know, they're not only getting it free, in a sense that it's applied free and all the paperwork is being paid for by the sludge brokers, but often this material has to be gotten rid of, and sometimes it's just simply people are just landowners are simply paid to take it. They're not even growing crops anymore. They're just dumping it in, you know, in pits or whatever.
Who pays the haulers?
Oh, in that sense, yes, the sludge brokers like Synagro and Minion and the smaller, they are getting paid by the municipality, by the sewage treatment plant to take this material away. So they're profiting from it, obviously.
So people can flush things down the toilet, the municipal governments treat it to the extent that they treat it, which from what you say is not really treating all of it, and then the municipalities pay the haulers to haul it over to the farmlands, and the haulers pay farmers to dump it on their land.
Yeah, I just want to correct something quickly. It's not what flush down toilets. That's just a very small part of it. It's every industry in the country can dump into sewers their industrial waste. That is why it's so rich in pollutants, and that's why it's so hazardous.
Can you give us sort of a list of what some of the toxic pollutants that we're dealing with are?
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge list. But let's just, you know, all the metals, arsenic, mercury, lead, manganese, fluoride, DDT, DDE, tetrachloroethylene, PBDEs, toluene, ethanol, polychlorinated biphenyls. There are just, it's a huge list. We have it on our webpage. It has a long list of the dry cleaning fluid.
Carolyn, what about all of the drugs that all of us take?
Of course. All the pharmaceuticals, again, not only the ones that we excrete and that go in the toilet, but the drugs and pharmaceuticals that are disposed of by the pharmaceutical industries. You know, they also, of course, go in there.
Wow. David, are you there in San Francisco?
And some of the most dangerous ones are the solvents that are used and the detergents. And then not only that, but you have a mixture, you have a complex mixture. And then you have pathogens that are part of this formula. And sewage treatment plants actually produce superbugs. They produce them because obviously, pathogens don't stand still. They respond to stress, and they can then withstand some of the stresses in the processes, and so they become antibiotic resistant. And then that antibiotic resistance is transferred to the soil. You had a good person here several months ago, on antibiotic resistance, and we talked a great deal about that. Mm-hmm. Good program. So that, you know, this, and this one very well-known chemist, the biologist, once said, you have this complex mixture, and the important thing is that the problem is not that we lack evidence that low-level chemical mixtures present cause harm. The problem is that the regulatory system is blind to data that cannot be reduced to a simple cause-effect, single chemical model. And this is what we have, a complex mixture, and there's no way you can test it. There's no money, no protocol, no lab that can ever test a complex mixture of pathogens and chemicals, the interactions, to claim or to say that this is safe.
Wow. David, are you there up in San Francisco?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead. Sorry to keep you waiting there.
No problem. It's an excellent show. I was going to say the cost-effective life, that seems to be what this problem is all about and how they get away with it. Just last year when we were hearing about death panels and the healthcare system, if you think about what's being said, these polluters are poisoning us and they're not paying our medical bills. So okay. For generations, not just Rachel Carson wrote about this, 50-something years ago, probably almost 60 years ago. She wrote about this specifically, that the polluting companies would need to cover up. And in doing so, they would have to dumb down the schools. So no longer...
Okay, you're going to have to hold that thought, David, because we have to take a quick break. Michael Olson, Kristen Carlson... we have Patty Martin from Safe Food and Fertilizers, Carolyn Snyder from Citizens from Sludge-Free Land. The question is the food that we grow in this safe to eat? Do stay tuned, right back. Well, there it is, folks. Just like China, we find ourselves in a fix where we're spreading what could be some very nasty stuff across our land. Is there a way out of this? Kristen, what are we going to do?
I'd like to know, Patty, how much do you think this is going on now since you sort of broke this story? And what percentage of land do you think it's being spread on, the fertilizer with hazardous waste in it?
Oh, that's a really tough, that's a very tough question. This is both the sludge and the fertilizer issues are great places to hide, toxic materials, because they're only looked, for example, the sludge is only looked at for 9 priority pollutants and a couple of viruses maybe or pathogens. And in the case of the fertilizers, for the most part, it's only looked for the guaranteed analysis, right? And so that hasn't changed. There's still no national fertilizer standard.
They can still put that stuff in the fertilizer?
Well, the zinc-containing hazardous waste, yes, for certain, okay? My point is that because it's still fertilizer doesn't have a set numerical standard for the toxics or along for the ride, as it's referred to, it still could be a place where, anything goes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not looking for it. For example, we tested fertilizers from 9 countries around the world and then from 12 states and, found that our fertilizers are much more contaminated. This is after the Seattle Times series. This is 2001. This is, the same time that the EPA is promulgating this new rule, this new loophole for zinc-containing hazardous waste. And our fertilizer contaminants were orders of magnitude higher than the rest of the world. okay? In one sample, we actually found PCBs, okay? So you don't look for PCBs in fertilizer, so why, you know, I mean, it would be a great place to hide things is what I'm saying.
Right.
You understand? Kristen had asked earlier what kind of things are found in hazardous waste fertilizers, and we had found things like dioxins, PAHs, you know, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, and then, of course, you know, a plethora of heavy metals. And the concern here is that, you know, the smaller the organism, the more vulnerable they are. And so this puts our infants, toddlers, developing fetuses at greatest risk, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So we're all sitting here shaking our heads. Carolyn, are we like China now, spreading all of this stuff across our land? You know, we pride ourselves in our cleanliness, but it seems like it isn't quite working out that way.
No, it's not. it's, you know, the question, you had an earlier question about, I mean, your main question is about our food. Is it safe to eat this food? I would like to talk a little bit about the soil. What are we doing to our soil, which is the place where we grow our food? Soil is an ecosystem, a living ecosystem, and you cannot use it as a repository of our hazardous waste. That's exactly what is happening.
And that's exactly what happened in China. Goodness sakes, we're kind of out of time, but at least we were able to put this on the table. I want to thank Patty Martin, who will always be the mayor of Quincy, Washington. I want to thank Carolyn Snyder out there in the East, and I want to thank Kristen Carlson for putting this show together. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in out there. Remember, cheap food isn't. That's Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, and this show proves it pretty well. Holy smokes. Thank you all.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.